Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Samach Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Samache, six lines from the top, you'll notice a section that has two dots in it, printer's colon marking, and the Gemara reads, Avol Amru Chachomim Kol Oif Hadores Tomei. We were dealing with the signs of kashrus with regard to birds, and it was mentioned that according to the Chachamim, any oaf that is found to do dores, drisa action, this involves the bird holding down its food with its leg and picking it up with its beak in order to eat. A bird that behaves that way, holding down its food while it picks it up with its beak, is tomei, is unkosher. Before going further in the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading in the outside margin. And under this topic heading, we've written Od Simone Of Lehatir Leesor. More signs with regard to birds to establish either their kashrus or their lack of kashrus. So as we go on in the Gemara, we notice a framed section that follows Tanya. This is a Tanaic source. In our Gemara marking system, we attempt to frame off Tanaic sources so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara literature. So the Braisa here says, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Dores v'ochel, if a bird does Dores while it eats, Biodua shutame, then it is known, it is clear that it is an unkosher type bird. Yesh lo etzba yesera v'zefek v'kokavano niklaf. If it has an etzba yesera, this is an extra type of protrusion, we call it a toe, coming from the back of its leg, and a zefek is one of the organs of digestion. V'kokavano niklaf is one of the other organs of digestion in a bird, and the kokavan is peelable. B'yodua shu tor. Then it's a sign that it's a kosher type bird. Rabbi Elazar b'Reb Tzadok Omer. Rabbi Elazar introduces another sign. He says, "Moischin loy chut shel meshicha." You would draw a piece of string in a taut fashion, and the bird would settle, stand on the string. Im cholek es raglov. If it splits its toes, shtayim lekan v'shtayim lekan. Tomei, if in the way it grasps the string with its toes, the toes would be split, two on one side, two facing the other. In other words, we could say in a spread out fashion, two and two, that's tomei. However, if it divides its toes, sholosh lekan, ve'achas lekan, three and one, that's tohor. Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer, kol oaf hakolet mino avir, tomei. Birds that catch their prey in mid-flight, that's a sign that it's an unkosher variety bird. The Gemara asks, Tzifrasa, Nami Miklat Kolta, Tzifrasa is a type of tohar, kosher variety bird, and we know it catches its food in mid-air, so how can in the source we say that a bird that practices that is considered unkosher? Omar Abaye, Kolet V'ochel Kuaminan. In the source, when we featured a bird like that as tomei, that's it not only catches its food in midair but eats it in mid-flight. That is the tomei type bird. The Tanaic source says, Achirim omrim shochan im temeim tomei im tahorim tahor. If you notice a bird that you don't know whether it's a kosher variety bird or not, notice the other birds that it's hanging around with. assuming you know what those other birds are. So if you have your unidentified bird hanging around with tome, unkosher variety birds, then the bird in question is like them. In other words, you judge a person, or in this case, you judge a bird by its friends. Keman, this teaching would go according to whom? We have this source, the Achirim, and we're now asking, according to which other Tanaic authority is it? And we're presenting this as a question, because the Gemara is going to then say otherwise after the end of this long question. You could see we have a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical descending dashed line indicating the length of the question. So the Gemara asks, Keman, Kerabi Eliezer, are we assuming that the Achirim follows only Shitas Rabbi Elazar? And in presenting the question, we would say that Rabbi Elazar is an individual opinion, and generally speaking, it's preferable if you have an unknown Shita, or you're trying to discover like whom someone is going, that they would follow a majority opinion. Hence, the Gemara is asking, is the Achirim limited to Rabbi Elazar Desanya? And here the Gemara features Rabbi Elazar's Shita. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Lo l'chinam holach zarzir etzel orev. It's not for nothing that the zarzir, a type of bird, found itself in the company of the orev, a known unkosher variety bird, element ne shehu mino. It's because the zarzir is a type of orev. So we see that Rabbi Elazar seems to have this perception that you judge the bird by the company it keeps. So are we to assume then the Achirim are according to Shitas Rabbi Elazar alone and not the Rabbanan? The Gemara says, Afilu Temo Rabbanan. What the Achirim were saying conforms to the Rabbanan as well. Shochan v'nidme ko'aminan. We're talking about a bird that not only dwells with other birds, but it also looks like those other birds. So if you have a bird that you're not sure of its kashrus status, and you find it dwelling with other known category birds, let's say known unkosher birds, and this unknown bird has the appearance of those other birds, that would establish it being like them. And if they're unkosher, so your unknown bird also would be unkosher. It seems from this answer of the Gemara that Rabbi Elazar was going even further, was saying that even if it doesn't look like the other birds, if the unknown bird is keeping the company of other known birds, even though they don't look alike, the unknown bird is then deemed like the other group. Uvichagovim, Kol Shiesh Lo V'chulei. The Gemara now at this point leaves birds and goes into a discussion concerning the signs of kashrus relevant to locusts. And on the outside margin, you can see we have a Nosei Klali. Klali means a general topic heading. And we have an indication also that this lasts, so Daf Samach Vov, this is a discussion concerning Chagovim, locusts. The Mishnah had mentioned different signs that establish the kashrus of the locust, and amongst the different signs, it mentioned that that it has wings that cover rubo, the majority of it. So the Gemara wants to know what is the intention of this idea of rubo, my rubo. Omar v'Yehuda Amar Rav, and we have a little aleph over this, indicating this is the first of two versions. So he says, Rov or Ko, that the wings extend along the majority of the length of the locust's body. The Amri law, another version, is Rov Hekefo, that we're talking about wings that cover Rov of the circumference of the body, but not necessarily the length. Omar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa, in character, namely Rav Papa, says what he says here, like he says elsewhere, Hilkoch bo'inon roiv orko u'bo'inon roiv hekefo. Rav Papa, when confronted with two possibilities, often says, well, let's try to include both possibilities in the practical application of the halacha. So according to Rav Papa, if you want to be able to eat a locust, you would have to have its wings covering the majority of its length and body circumference. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source. that deals with a situation where the signs of kashrus are there only part of the life of the creature. Ein loy afshav v'osid legadel li'achar zman. It doesn't have a particular sign of kashrus now, but it will grow as the creature matures. Kagon hazachal, like is the case with regard to the zachal. Mutar, it's okay, it's kosher. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yosi Omer, asher loy kra'ayim. That is the posuk as you would read it. And in the written version of the Torah, it says va'asher loy, not with lam, not with an aleph in the word loy, but with a vav, lo meaning it has, and in with the word lo spelled with an aleph, it is a negation. It doesn't have, so that this word lo has, depending on how you read it and spell it, you actually come out with it opposite meanings, opposite intent. So the posuk says that asher loy kraim, kraim are a reference to its legs. Af al pi she'ein loy achshav v'osid legadel li'achar zman. The posuk is referring to something that doesn't have right now, but does grow later on. So you can see a reference in the posuk itself to this idea of yes and no. Not, it doesn't have now, will grow later on. My Zachal, in the Brisa there was a reference to the Zachal creature. What is that? Omar Abaye, Askarin. Askarin was a more familiar term to the Gemara, so it uses that in order to define the Zachal. And it turns out that it's a type of Chagav, a type of locust. And Rashi points out in Dibor Masal Iskara, Ein lo kartzulayim bekatnuso v'gdeilim lacharzman. It doesn't have the kartzulayim, are jumping feet, the extra 2 feet that are positioned, connected to the locust body near its head for jumping purposes. And this particular creature, the zachal, or askarin, doesn't have one when it's young, but it grows as it matures, the jumping legs. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source, which we introduce here with a diamond marking. You'll see another diamond toward the bottom of the page, at the end of the second line from the bottom, Debei Rabbi Shmuel. These are two Tanaic sources that deal with the psukim that are relevant to the kosher variety locusts, and how the two Tanaic sources, Darshan, expound on these psukim. Later in the Gemara will ask the question of what is the difference between these two sources. Part of our job, as the Gemara goes on, will be to define the different body characteristics of these locusts. Tanu Rabbanan, es eile mehem tochelu, es ha'arbe. And the pasuk itself goes on to list several different kinds of locusts. And as we go on in the Gemara, you will notice we have the other names like Solom, Chargol, are also mentioned. And we want to know what they are. Now, as we've mentioned in previous shurim, in the context of our shir, we don't engage in translation into English of what these creatures are, being that we don't have a direct tradition on many creatures that appear in the Gemara, so as to avoid making a mistake, we'll simply use as a reference point the name of the creature as it appears in the Gemara itself, without translating it. Tanu Rabbanan, the pasuk says, "Es eilu mehem tochelu es ha'arbe v'chule arbe." Ze govai. The arba is the govai insect. Solom, which is also mentioned in the pasuk, ze roshun. Roshun being something more familiar to the Gemara than the Torah word. Chargoyle, ze nipul. Chagav, ze gadion. Ma tamad lomar leminoi, leminehu, 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 arba pa'amim. Why does the Torah, what is the Torah intending when, in addition to these names, it also uses the expression lemino, or a variation thereon, four times? The word literally, lemino, means according to its category. So you'll have the pasuk referring to the solam and anything like it. So the Gemara answers, well, these four, this Brisa answers, these four words, lemino, have a specific role in including more, four more creatures. Lahavi, Tsipuris Tromim, that's one. Number two, V'yuchna Yerushalmis. Three, V'ar Tzuvya. And four, V'har Zavonis. The Rashi points out that the Tsipuris Kromim is a type of Arbe, and that's a type of locust. Yuchna, and the word Arba had appeared in the Brisa as well as in the Pasuk, of course, where the Brisa said that the Arba was Govai. So here's another form of Arba, because the Torah mentions Arba Lemino. So another type of Arba is this Tsipores Kromim. The Yuchna is a type of Solom. So when the Torah says Solom Lemino, it comes to include this creature called Yuchna Yerushalmis. Likewise, the Artsuvya is a type of Chargoyle. Rashi points out information that will be of relevance for the Gemara later on, that the Artsuvya is a type of Chargoyle that has a tail, where the former two creatures do not have tails. This is a unique aspect of this Artsuvya Chargoyle creature. And the Razvonis is a type of Chagav. So that would account for the Leminos that accompany these types of creatures. Now, Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. This is another Tanaic source, and says, it opens up with something that's a bit obscure, but the meaning of these terms are become more apparent as you go on with the Tanaic source itself, and especially the Rashi. The Rashi gets into great detail when explaining this source. And by the way, if you can scan ahead, you can see that this is a rather long Tanaic source. So, the Beir Mishmael Tona, Elu Klole Klolos, V'Elu Prote Protos. The terms that are found in the Pasuk are general terms, klole klolos, and prote protos are specific type terms. But for a greater elaboration on this, we can glance at the Rashi, the Bei Rabbi Shmuel Tona, Hanoch Leminehu, the word Leminehu that we saw in the previous Tanaic source, Lav Proti Ninhu, they are not specifics. Kida amris de lo marbi elomino de cholchad, like we said in the previous source. In other words, in looking at the first diamond source that we just learned before the Debei Rabbi Shmuel, we saw that lemino came to include specific creatures, very specific creatures, and the source listed them by name, the Tsipores Kromim, Yuchushamas, Artsuvya, and Erzovnis. This Tanaic source doesn't use the word lemino as a reference to as referring to a specific type of insect. Elo kloli ninu, Rashi goes on to say, kloli, they represent categories. V'yesh kan kloli klolos uprote protos. What does that mean? Klomar, klolos habo boin achar klolos, a general term that follows a preceding general term. Shelo letzorech, seemingly unnecessary. The asu ledrosha, and being that the simple meaning or the simple translation would seem to be superfluous, they're therefore coming for a drosha to include something else. Uprotin haboyin shelo letzorech achar protos. We will see in the pasuk also details that follow details seemingly for no reason, and therefore. Ulidrosha bo al korchoch, and they therefore come, they have to be coming for some type of other drosha, an allusion to something else, other than certainly the translation. Ulikamen meforshu v'ozil, later in this source there will be further elaboration. The solam v'chagov hein haprotos shelo hutzrichu. in this pasuk, the Solom and Chagov are insects that are mentioned seemingly for no reason, and the reason we'll be saying that is because if you want to focus in on different body characteristics, it would have been sufficient for the Torah to make reference to, let us say, Arbe and Chagov, Arbe and Chargoyl, and from that I could have extrapolated from them and determine on my own that Solom and Chargov would have been kosher. In other words, between the Arbe and Chargoyl, I would know the necessary characteristics of kashrus in order to establish the Solom and Chagov based on their body characteristics. So why does the Torah enumerate Solom and Chagov anyway? So, as we said, that's for a drosha. Ulaminehu haksubim imoimim haklolos shelo hutzrichu, and the words ulaminehu seem to be unnecessary. In other words, if you're going to be looking at the specific names of insects, and from that already you're establishing general categories, what do I have to add the word ulamino, which means the category? It would already have been included. So the Tanaic source goes on. Arbe ze govai. Lemino. Lahavi. This comes to include. Tsipores kromen. Ein li elo habo vi ein lo gabachas. Gabachas is a case of the head. We have this term gabachas in the case of negoyim as well. Different body afflictions in the realm of Mitzoroyim with human beings. It has to do with a situation where some of the hair on the head have been ripped out or balded. So the Tziporis Kromim is something that is categorized under Arbe. Or we say Lemino comes to include the Tziporis Kromim. By the way, it's worth noting, we had seen the expression Tziporis Kromim in the first Tanaic source as well, at which point we had explained already that it's a type of Arbe. And it does not have gabachas, meaning it doesn't have this lack of hair on its head, or hair or fur on its head. So from the posuk itself, if I had just the Tziporis Kromim, which is included through the word lemino that appears together with arbe, I would know that a kosher insect is one that lacks the gabachas phenomenon, this balding phenomenon. That's what it means here on the top line, ein li elo habo vi ein lo gabachas. Habo vi yesh lo gabachas minayin. How would I know about an insect that does have gabachas, but it also is kosher? In other words, even though it's not like the arbe, it still could be kosher. Talmud lomar solom. With that, the Torah says solom. Now, the solom does have the gabachas phenomenon. And it's explained here that ze nipul. The solom is more commonly known as nipul. Luminehu, the word luminehu in the context of solom, lahavi es ha-ushkaf. It comes to include the ushkaf insect. The ein li elo habo, the ein lo gabachas, habo vi yesh lo gabachas, habo vi ein lo zonav. Up till this point, we take stock of the different body characteristics that these two categories of insects have. We said the arb and the solom. So amongst them, you find those that have gabachas, some that don't have gabachas, and those two do not have tails. Habo v'yesh lo zonav minayim. What about an insect that comes to you that happens to have a tail? So will that be kosher? Tamalomer chargol. Yep. If it a chargol happens to have a tail, and it's explained here ze roshun, more commonly known as roshun, and leminehu, the leminehu that comes together with chargol in the Torah, lahavi es hakarsefes ves hashachlonis, two more insects. So now the Brisa does the same things it did before, taking stock of all the different body characteristics that can be found amongst the Arbis, Solom, and Chagol. Notice we've underlined those names to make it easier to cite them. So the review now in the Brisa: the Ein Li Elo Habo, the Ein Lo Gabachas, Habo V'Yesh Lo Gabachas, Habo V'Ein Lo Zonov, Habo V'Yesh Lo Zonov, Habo V'Ein Roishoy Oruch. And this is a new point. It does not have an elongated head. In other words, if you view the Arbe, Solom, and Chagol, none of them have elongated heads. Habov Roisha Oruch Minayin, what about an insect that happens to have an elongated head? Could that possibly be kosher? So we want to say yes. Now, the question is, how will you come to conclude that when the Arbis, Solom, and Chagol, none of them have elongated heads? Amris, Hareata Don Binyan Av Mishloshdan. What we are asked to do is establish a rule based on a common denominator amongst the three insects we've made. Lo roi arba kiroi chagol. The arba is not similar to the chagol. We pointed out the differences between them. And we should note before going further that we have a chart that accompanies this Gemara in the outside margin. And when it says over here that the Arbe is not like the Chargol, so if you look under the Arbe characteristics and contrast it with the Chargol, you'll see that the Arbe, for example, has no Gabachas and the Chargol has Gabachas. So they're not like each other. And continuing in the Brisa, V'lo roi chargol k'roi arbe, and likewise the chargol is not like the arbe. V'lo roi shneim k'roi solom, the arbe and chargol are not like the solom. If you take a look at the arbe versus solom, the arbe on the chart, you can see the arbe has no gabachas and the solom does. If you compare the solom to the chargol, so the chargol has a tail and the solom has no tail. So we can say that the arba and chargol are different than the solom. So it says that v'lo roi shneim k'roi solom, v'lo roi solom k'roi shneim. Hatzara shava shebahen. The common denominator between these three insects, the arba, solom, and chargol, is as follows. And by the way, the upcoming points are not on the chart, but these are known already from the Mishnah. Sheyesh lo, these three all have arba raglayim, arba knofayim, four legs, four wings, the katsulayim, and each one has two jumping legs, uknofav chofin es rubo, and its wings cover the majority of its body. Af kol, so from this phenomenon of these four characteristics that we see are common to all three of these insects, Arbis, Solom, and Chagol, even though the Arbis, Solom, and Chagol are different from one another, but they have these four characteristics in common. Af kol sheyesh lo arba raglayim, v'arba knofayim, v'katzulayim, v'knofav chofim es rubo, so to any other insect that has these four characteristics will be kosher, and what we've just done is including roshay oruch. So if you have an insect that happens to have an elongated head, and it has these four characteristics of arba raglayim, arba knofayim, katzulayim, and knofel chofin es rubo, it too will be kosher. The Braisa asks, Balo hatzartzur, the tzartzur is the name of a creature, V'lo tzartzur hazeh yeshlo arba raglayim v'arba knofayim v'katzulayim v'knofav choyfen es rubo, and yochol yehei muter, could it be that the tzartzur is muter? Talmud lomar chagav. Therefore the Torah adds another creature called chagav, which tells me sheshmoi chagav. The Torah wants the creature, the insect that is to be kosher, to be called chagov. Well, if that's such an important consideration, Ishmo Chagov, if you have an insect called Chagov, categorized as Chagov, Yochol Ein Bo Kol Hasimanim Halolu, maybe is Chagov is sufficient, even if it doesn't have any of the other signs. Talmud Lomar Leminehu. Therefore, you have the word Leminehu, Ad Shei Bo Kol Hasimonim Halolu. So you could see here how the Tana Beis Shmuel uses the word Leminehu as a general term, referring to all insects, that they must have the four basic characteristics that were mentioned here, in addition to it being called Chagov. The Gemara now raises a question. Porich Rav Achoy. We should point out, of course, that the question is a long question, and you can see that through the long question marking that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. Porich Rav Achoy. Rav Achoy asks, how is it that this source suggests making a Tzad HaShoveh from the Arba Solomon Chargoyle, based on the fact that they have the four body signs that were enumerated, and using them as a basis for including other insects that have Roishoy Oruch? And we pointed out that Arba Solomon Chargoyle, none of them, and you can see this very clearly on the chart, none of them have Roishoy Oruch. So Porach Rav Achoy Ma Lahanoch Shekein Ein Roishon Oruch. How can you learn from a Tzad Hashoveh, a common denominator between Arba Solomon and Chargol, which none of which have Roishon Oruch, elongated heads, and an attempt to include insects that have elongated heads? You might say, well, look, we can overlook the head issue, because once insects have the four enumerated body signs that we mentioned before, we include, Mycenon means we include others, and don't ask concerning the difference, don't challenge the limud, this attempt. Well, then, if the four body characteristics is enough to establish kashrus, then chargoyle nami, the shavu lehu, the chargoyle, which we featured above, and it's in the pasuk, happens to be one that has all four body signs, lo lichtov, let the Torah not write it either, let it be left out, let it not write it, v'tesi mi'arba v'solom, and learn it from a common denominator between the Arba and Solom. In other words, the Arba and Solom, though they are different from one another, they have in common the four body characteristics. And if you're saying that the four body characteristics is sufficient for including other things, let me include the Chargol without the Torah writing it. Elo, ikol mifrach ma'alahanoch shekein ein lohen zonof. The reason we don't leave out Chargol and rely on Arba and Solom alone is because I would be able to challenge the Arba Solom common denominator by saying, well, Arba and Solom don't have tails, whereas the Chargol does have a tail. And you can see this easily on the chart. And as a result of this difference, I can't include Chargol without the Torah having written it specifically. Well, then, Hochinami, so to hear, with regard to the three of them, the Arba, Solom, Chargol, triumvirate, Ikol Mifach Ma Lahanoch, Shekein, Ein, Roshan Oruch. The Arba, Solom, and Chargol, none of them have Roshan Oruch. So how is it that you're trying to include even insects that have Roshan Oruch? The Gemara answers, Elo Omar Rav Achoy. He explains how it is that we are somech, that we do rely on the four body signs. How is it that we rely on those signs? So Elo Omar Rav Achoy, Solom Yesero Hu. The Solom itself happens to be totally extra. And when you have something that's totally extra, we will point out why it's extraneous superficially. So the fact that it's totally extra gives us a right through the oral tradition, and we have to emphasize this is not something one does on his own. One has to have a tradition in order to do this, but in fact conclude that we are able to include things that are not exactly similar to the list. So Elo, we said the Solomiz Yiserahu, and we have this now elaborated upon. We have a long answer marking that accompanies this section. The tough letter that's encircled, tough meaning teretz, with the descending vertical dashed line in the outside to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, gives you a feeling of the length of this answer. Loi lichtoiv rachmona solam. Let the Torah leave out solam altogether. V'teisim arbe v'chargol. And I will derive on my own, through analyzing the arba and chargol, that the solom also is a kosher variety insect without the Torah writing solom. Demai parchis. What challenge would you try to make if you had, let us say, arba? So you'd say, mala arba, di ein lo gabachas. I can't learn solom from arba, being that the solom, the arba has no gabachas, and the solom has gabachas. Well, harei chargol. So notice the Torah writes chargol, the yesh lo gabachas. So the chargol has gabachas, and it's listed in the Torah's kosher. Why bother writing solom? Well, you might try to challenge that by saying ma le chargol, the yesh lo zonav. How can I learn from the chargol? The chargol has a zonav, has a tail, whereas the solom does not. So I couldn't derive solom from chargol. So to that we say, hayrei arba di ein lo zonav. The arba, which the Torah does list, does not have a tail, just like the solom does not have a tail. So I can, as far as the tail is concerned, I can learn from the arba. I don't have to write solom. Solom, because of Rachmona Lomali. In other words, this is very, it's a very well illustrated by looking at the chart. If you look at all the characters of the arba and all of the characteristics of the chargol, you will find between the two of them the solom characteristics as well. For example, the arba has no gabachas, the solom also, the arba has no gabachas. And the chargol has a gabachas. So from between the two of them, we cover both gabachas situations. The arba has no zonov, and the chargol has a zonov. So with that, we cover both zonov situations. So you're going to include the solom either way. As far as Rosho Oruch is concerned, there are no differences between them on that score. So why did the Torah write Solom? Solom because of Rachmona Lomali. Why does it write that when I could have figured it out from looking at the Arba and Chargol? Im eino inyan legufo, if I don't need the writing of Solom for itself, teneo inyan l'rosho oruch, let us use it, use the word, or the presence of the word Solom in the Torah to include something new, to include insects with elongated heads. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.